Hey guys, Fly on the Wall is back for another season. That's right, on audio and video every Monday and Thursday.
Follow and listen to Fly on the Wall everywhere you get your podcasts.
What? Over? Did you say over? Nothing is over until we decide it is. Was it over when the Germans bombed Pearl Harbor? Hell no!
Germans? Forget it, he's rolling.
And it ain't over now! Because when the going gets tough, the tough get going. Who's with me? Let's go. Come on.
Well, when in doubt, Mike Sielski, I go to 1970s movies, and I figured, what more appropriate than that? Good morning, everybody. I'm Glenn Mack now here in the Delaware Valley. Mike Sielski, my partner in Houston. Today, I trust that your flight and your hotel and all that was good, Mike?
All is well in the world of national travel, I guess you'd call it, Glenn. So I am settled in here in Houston and ready to cover Game 6 tonight.
Good. Well, here we go. Here we are. You know the facts. Philly's down 3-2 tonight. Tomorrow, we hope, Houston win both games. You're world champions, and Mike, Philly's fans need to... cross their fingers, hope that Zach Wheeler is as great of the as they have seen him many times before. Hope that that hot, cold offense gets hot again. Hope that no hard grounders get hit to Rhys Hoskins. Try to live for tomorrow. Your thoughts on today? In a couple of minutes, go back and review the other night, but just kind of your thoughts on today. And again, actually, before I ask you, I'm not sure that how much you got to get the pulse of the city down there and versus eating barbecue and drinking beer with your colleagues, which I assume was part of it. But give us the picture from, what they call it, Space City, right? It's not H-Town.
Yeah.
H-Town is Havertown, where I live, mind you.
It's interesting, Glenn. So I got up this morning and was on my way to the studio here in Houston where I'm doing the show. And I get into my elevator, and who is already there but Mike D'Antoni, former NBA head coach, former Sixers assistant coach. And so we're chatting on the ride down to the lobby, and first thing he says to me is, boy, tough situation there. And I say, yeah, you know, Harden's hurt, and Embiid hasn't been in the lineup, but Tyrese Maxey's playing well. And he says, oh, no, I meant the Astros. So that was the start of the morning. And then I got into my Uber to ride over to the station here, and I'm chatting with my driver, and I said, are people here into the Astros? Is the city wrapped up in the World Series? And he says, yeah, but what we're really ticked off about is that story about how the Astros couldn't get served at Angelo's Pizza and Mike's Barbecue.
By the way, it was wrong. They couldn't get served because the restaurants weren't staying open that late. One wasn't staying open that late. The other could not handle an order that or didn't do that kind of cuisine.
Right. That's right. The Astros had asked for Latin food from a barbecue restaurant. Yes.
Right. So that story is incorrect. But yeah, okay. So I'm glad they're worked up about that.
I was going to say, needless to say, Glenn, I did not run into anybody wearing orange, yellow, white striped T-shirts screaming their faces off about the prospect of an Astros World Series and World Championship.
All right. Let us spend a minute, Mike, just kind of reviewing Game 5 the other night. It was a tense, exciting game, ultimately disappointing, of course. It was there to win. Phillies left 12 runners on base. They went 1-for-7 with runners in scoring position. Houston takes it 3-2. Sheil Kapadia of The Athletic had a very interesting note, and I'm not as big on these kind of things, you know, as others are, but there were 16 balls the other night hit at an exit velocity of 95 plus. The Phillies had 11 of them. There were 12 balls hit with an expecting batting average of 500 plus. The Phillies had 9 of those, and of course they missed chances to score in the 2nd, 3rd, 5th, 6th, and 8th. And Mike, if they lose the series, that's going to be the game that stings more than the no-hitter to me.
Yeah, I agree with you, Glenn. And in a series, in any postseason series, right, time is crunched. You can look at long-term trends over a full season all you want, but in a postseason series, moments matter. And you go back to the moment, for instance, I guess it was the bottom of the 8th inning where the Phillies have 1st and 3rd with one out, and Brandon Marsh strikes out. And, you know, Brandon Marsh is the ninth hitter in the lineup and has been pretty good for the Phillies since he came here. But that's a moment where you need a hitter to put the ball in play. And for all the talk of, as you said, the exit velocity and the number of balls that the Phillies hit hard in Game 5, they didn't hit the ball hard in that moment, and they needed that. And then, of course, Kyle Schwarber comes up next, and you have the first baseman holding Gene Segura on, and Schwarber hits an absolute rocket down the first baseline right at the first baseman.
Yeah.
So bad luck there. But yeah,
their first baseman actually caught the ball.
Yeah. How about that? You know, something we're not accustomed to seeing lately. Yeah. So I think you're right. I think if the Phillies end up losing this series, Game 5 is going to be the one that we look back on and say that was their opportunity and they didn't take it.
Okay. So moving on, what has to happen now is that Rob Thompson and the players have to, as they have said and others have said, have the flush it out mentality, right? This is a team that has done that before. This is a team, of course, we know that was 21-29 at the end of May. This is a team that was 12.5 games back in the National League East. Well, they didn't win the East, but nonetheless, those other teams are gone. This is a team that has shown resilience, but this is their first elimination game of the postseason, and they need to win against an Astros team that had a mere 108 wins during the regular season against an Astros team that never seems to make an error or mistake. And tonight against the lefty Framber Valdez, a 2022 All-Star who has given up just 3 runs and 3 starts this postseason. Of course, he won Game 2 of the series, gave up 1 run in, I think it was 6 2/3 innings, touched his glove in his pocket and did all kinds of weird stuff. But what has to happen tonight, first and foremost, is the Phillies have to figure out a way to reach this guy.
Yeah, they do. They didn't hit him much in Game 2. And they were down quickly in that game as well, which kind of amped up the pressure on them to try to forge another comeback, and they weren't able to do it. Look, let's be honest about some things here. They need some of their big hitters to turn things around. JT Realmuto, for instance, and I'm sympathetic to the idea that JT is just maybe worn down at this point. He's caught something like 250 more innings than any other catcher in the major leagues. But since hitting that game-winning home run in Game 1, he's 1-for-17 with 11 strikeouts. Now, you hope that that long fly ball he hit in the ninth inning that Chaz McCormick made such a great play on gets him squared up again.
I watched that thing 30 times, and every time I think it's going to fall in.
Yeah, yeah. And give all due respect to Chad McCormick, a Westchester native and Millersville alumnus, because it was a great potential game-saving play.
Great catch, yeah.
Rhys Hoskins is hitting 142 in the series. Nick Castellanos is 3-for-20 and has come up in some spots where he could have done damage and was unable to do so. So the Phillies need these guys to get going. You can't rely on just Bryce Harper and Kyle Schwarber to be heroes time and time again. So if they're going to solve Valdez tonight, I think it has to start with those three guys.
I think that's a great way to put it. By the way, 215-592-9494, 215-592-9494. We are looking forward to talking to you today. The other big issue that we're going to see tonight, and we'll see how this plays out, is Zach Wheeler. Fatigue. Something he is going to have to overcome. So to recap, he missed a full month late in the season. He had right forearm tendonitis, elbow inflammation, made 3 starts late in September, stretched out to 77 pitches, was throwing 99 miles an hour, dominated the Cardinals, dominated the Braves, San Diego twice. You know, was they were saying he had the best whip in the history of the postseason, but last Saturday night, I guess it was, in Houston, Game 2, which Phillies lose 5-2, he gives up those 5 runs. 6 hits, 3 walks in just 5 innings. His velocity is clearly down. His command wasn't good. His quote the other day, and this one doesn't give me solace, it's just late in the season. It's a bad time for it to happen, but yeah, I mean, it is what it is. Mike, it is what it is not the motto I want on the Phillies 22 season yearbook, you know?
Yeah, it isn't. I will say this, Glenn, if you're looking for a ray of optimism, I went through Wheeler's starts this season, and he made 4 starts in a similar situation to the one that's presenting itself tonight, in that he made four starts the season with at least 6 days of rest. Okay, and one of those starts, of course, was when he came off the injured list.
Mm-hmm.
But over those four starts, he threw 22 and a third innings. He allowed only 13 hits and four earned runs, and he struck out 24. So and had a 1.61 ERA. So, yes, it's been a long season. Yes, those quotes are not exactly, give me the ball and get on my back, guys. But
just get me to the plate, boys. I need that.
Right, exactly. But if you're looking for a silver lining, he's been excellent this season when he has had 6 days of rest. And this is about the best you could hope for in the World Series, that your best starting pitcher had 6 days to recuperate. He said yesterday, after throwing a bullpen the day before, I think the extra rest always helps, but the bullpen felt good. I think we're on track. So, look, this is going to be one of those moments that kind of can help define Zach Wheeler's career in the same way that Curt Schilling in Game 5 of 1993
Ooh.
Helped define his career.
Like it.
Throwing 140 pitches and change, the way that Schilling pitched in the 2001 World Series. Look, if you like drama, this is it. But I know people in Philadelphia don't like drama. They want 7 runs in the first inning for the Phillies and cruise
great.
From there.
Yes. Let's get that 5 home run game again and just not have to sweat it out. So do we believe in momentum? Because I really don't. And I know, sometimes it's going your way and the ball hit by JT Realmuto in the 9th inning. In other circumstances, that would have gone over McCormick's head or out of his glove. And, the Realmuto would have been on third. Bryce Harper would have come up. There's the drama. We win. And the Phillies have not gotten the big hits, right? The Astros' defense is so good that they've stolen a lot of them. But I will say I am of the mind that momentum in baseball is the next starting pitcher.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think this series has kind of validated that, right? The Phillies should have had momentum coming out of Game 1, and the Astros came back and won that game and won it handily. The Phillies should have had momentum coming out of Game 3, and they got no hit the next night. So I don't think necessarily Phillies fans should be dismayed and saying, oh, well, the Astros have all the momentum now. They're rolling. And so, therefore, the Phillies have no chance. As we said, this team has been resilient. It would not be surprising to see them win tonight and force a Game 7, in which case, go ahead, flip a coin. Let's see what happens. I made a reference to somebody the other day. The Astros played in a World Series not that long ago in 2019, in which the home team didn't win a single game in mm-hmm. a 7-game series against the Washington Nationals. The Nationals came out, won the first 2 games in Houston. The Astros came back, swept the 3 games in D.C., and everybody thought, here we go. The Astros are a dynasty. They won the year before. They won in 2017. They're going to win again this year. And the Nationals pitching staff came out and shut them down in games 6 and 7 at Minute Maid Park. So you're right. I think there is no momentum. I think it's going to come down to how well Zach Wheeler throws tonight and whether maybe the one guy who I feel comfortable with at this point in a clutch situation, other than Bryce Harper and Kyle Schwarber, can Dean Segura, pop the ball through
so
the infield.
Funny. Yeah.
He's been the one guy who's kind of done that in this postseason where, just get the bat on the ball in this situation. And he's done it a couple of times and done damage when he has. So maybe that's what they need. They need Segura to be up in a clutch spot.
That's a fine point. I think get the early lead tonight. It's already a passive crowd, but silence it even more. Get 6 solid from Wheeler. An early Schwarber home run to lead off would clearly make us all feel great. Have Gene Segura, as you say, kind of throw his bat outside the strike zone again and loop a single in right field and, drive in Realmuto or Castellanos or something. And look, this team is a wild card team. This team has overcome a lot so far. This team has defied expectations so much to get where they are. I am not going to be the person to sit here today and tell you they can't do it again. One more time tonight. One extra swing goes your way. One Astro makes an error. Well, that would be novel. You get one break. What does he say in Bull Durham? One gork, one Texas leaguer. One
ground ball with eyes.
Right. One bleeder. Right. You get one or two of those, all of a sudden you got the lead, you turn it over to Sir Anthony and Alvarado, and all of a sudden we're talking about Game 7 tomorrow, and I think it will be something. I'll just say, we'll get some callers in here, and please don't take this as me implying they're not going to win today, because I certainly believe they've got a very good shot to do so. It's great to see. It has been great over the last month to see baseball back in Philadelphia. It was pretty dormant over the last, I don't know, decade, whatever.
Oh, yeah.
And we remember now how great it was during those years from 07 to 11, and the 46,000 that have just packed the stadium and made so much noise, the incredible TV ratings here, the seeing everybody out in public wearing their Philly stuff, greeting each other with a Go Phils. It has been a great month, and I would certainly like to see it continue for two more days, Mike.
Oh, I agree. It's it shows the value and the magic of baseball. And this is coming again from somebody who has lost some of his passion for the sport the last few years, when it matters, because there's a game every night and the story is evolving and changing every single day. That separates it from football. You know, everybody gets wrapped up in the Eagles when they make a run to the Super Bowl like they did in early 2018. But it's different because there's a game every single night, and it takes you on this roller coaster from a Tuesday to a Wednesday to a Thursday to the off day, and you can't wait for Game 6 Saturday. You go into withdrawal because you've gotten into this rhythm of excitement every single night. And, yeah, look, I think no matter what the outcome of the series, I think you're right, Glenn, that getting baseball back at the forefront of sports fans' minds in Philadelphia is nothing but a good thing.
There you go. 215-592-9494. Let's talk to John and Manny Young starts us out this morning. Hey, John.
Hey, Glenn. I think I'm really positive. I'm trying to stay positive on the Phillies, but I think the big difference is when you got a guy on first and third, like when Marsh is up, Harper, when he gets up there, he just like spreads out and just tries to put his bat on the ball. I don't think the rest of the guys do that. You know, just like put it in play.
Yeah, well, I hate to say that's baseball these days, but it is so much that guys just every play or every at-bat swing for the fences. I thought there have been a lot of times this year when the Phillies, John and Mike, you know, played effective small ball under Rob Thompson. I have not seen that so much during the World Series. They had the opportunity. You mentioned it. Mike, I'll see how you feel, and then I'll go to John. The other night, when they had the situation with Marsh up, that a lot of people thought, hey, maybe that's a time to squeeze.
Yeah, you know, I wondered about that too, Glenn, but that would be such a break from what they have done. I can't think of another situation where they would have squeezed. And, you know, Marsh is your nine hitter. At some level, he's got to be thinking, I'm not up here to do damage. I'm up here to put the ball in play. And just because he struck out doesn't mean he wasn't trying to put the ball in play. And I think the third factor you got to consider is that the Astros bullpen and pitching staff as a whole is really good. I mean, it is terrific. Again,
they
no-hit the Phillies in Game 4. So give some credit to their staff as well in that situation.
Hey, Glenn, I got a quick Eagles question. Actually, from Mike.
Yeah.
For the Eagles, say the impossible. Say we get down there like 14-0. Do you play the guys the last couple games to break the Miami Dolphins undefeated record all the way or not? What would you do?
I would. I would not cough up the chance to go unbeaten. It would be so monumental.
Jalen Hurts takes a cheap shot, my friend.
I know, but it would be so monumental. You have to go for it, right? And I remember in, I think it was 2009, the Indianapolis Colts got to 14-0, and Jim Caldwell rested Peyton Manning and the starters, and ended up not winning the Super Bowl anyway. You know, I'm more of the mindset, you got a chance for immortality, you take it.
I am not.
Ali Zonka wouldn't like that.
Is it Mercury Morris? They do the toast every year. I am of the other mind. I want to win the Super Bowl. That is the only goal. I did not remember the Colts being 14-0. Of course, they didn't win the Super Bowl. I would have remembered that. You had the whole thing with the Patriots that year against when they lost to the Giants. Mike, it's all fine and dandy until somebody gets hurt. And if that happens, then you will regret it big time. I want the parade. They don't hold a parade for 17-0. They hold a parade for winning the Super Bowl.
Yeah, I see where you're coming from. I mean, look, there's arguments on both sides, right? I mean, Andy Reid took a lot of criticism in 2004 when he rested the starters in the last couple of games, and especially got criticized because Terrell Owens had already been hurt, so there was fear that they're not going to be as good anyway, and now you're making them rusty. And then they came out and steamrolled the Vikings and Falcons and got to the Super Bowl anyway.
Yeah, well, that's all I need. 215-592-9494. When we come back, we'll take your calls. We're also going to throw the Eagles into the conversation. They won on Thursday night. Some people not as impressed as maybe they ought to be. Mike and I will get into that. Mike Sielski is in Houston. I'm Glenn Macnow here in Philadelphia. 215-592-9494.
I'm Susie Welch, the host of Becoming You, a podcast where I help you stop living by default and start living by design. Listen to Becoming You wherever you get your podcasts.
Brown and Smith stacked to the far side of the field. It is fourth and goal from the two. And in for the touchdown goes Miles Sanders, his sixth of the season.
Well, there you go. That was Thursday night. Mike, I know you were covering the Phillies game. I was at home just wearing out the batteries on the remote going back and forth. I started watching on two screens. I had baseball on the computer, football on the TV. And it's like, I'm driving myself nuts. So I basically flipped back and forth so much that at one time I thought that Bryson Stott drove in Kenny Gainwell on a nice single. But nonetheless.
Yeah, I'm just glad that the local affiliates put the game on TV, that people could see it other than Amazon Prime, because trying to flip back and forth between Fox and Amazon Prime would have been so cumbersome and challenging. You would have missed a lot of action.
By the way, that's in the rules, I think, that if it's on Amazon Prime, when it's your team, you got to put it on more approachable TV. Anyway, a couple things. First of all, stupid bet update. There is none. I think you, who do you lead now? 5-1, 6-1, some.
I think it's 6-1. It's an insurmountable deficit.
It is an insurmountable lead, particularly with Britton Covey back there. I got no shot. anyway, it was funny to hear a lot of criticism of the Eagles after a 12-point win on the road. I mean, did they look great? No, they didn't. Not in certain areas. But here's the deal. It's a Thursday night. It's short rest on the road. People know those games are tough. Those are trap games. They still won it by two scores. And the fact that people were disappointed, I guess, just shows how well they have been playing. I was perfectly happy with it. Nobody got hurt. They widened the lead on the Cowboys and the Giants, both of whom have byes this week. Jimmy Kemsky of PhillyVoice.com quoted a 538.com number that says now the Eagles have a 99% plus chance to make the playoffs, a 74% chance to win the NFC East, which I actually would think it would be higher, and a 69% chance to earn the number one seed. I was fine with it. I know you were wrapped up in the Phils, but any reason that we should be upset about the Eagles win?
No. I went back and watched most of the game Friday. When I could. And look, there are two kind of competing realities here that everybody should be aware of. Number one, the Eagles have raised their own standard for performance, right? When you're 5-0, 6-0, 7-0, 8-0.
Can I interrupt you for a second? Because this evokes an old WIP Wing Bowl slogan one year, which is, we've up our standards, now up yours.
Yeah.
Anyway, I'm sorry. That's relevant to nothing, but you just...
And that's okay. It's still funny.
Go ahead.
But the fact is that when your team is 2-0, you take any victory as you can get it. When your team is 7-0, whether you're consciously doing this or not, you're saying to yourself, my team is 7-0, they should destroy everybody, and it should be easy. And it's not always going to be easy. And as you said, the conditions weren't great for the Eagles. It's a short rest. Thursday night football games are notoriously sloppy. They shouldn't play on Thursday nights, as far as I'm concerned. I think it's ridiculous that the league does this. And it's a road game, which leads me to my other kind of component here, which is that now that they're 7-0, 8-0, the Eagles are going to be everybody's Super Bowl. And so they're going to get the best effort from their opponents every single week from here until the end of the season. So however victory looks, you take it at this point. And are there certain reasons to be concerned that we can get into? Yeah, I think there are. But the fact is, it was still a 12-point victory on the road. You're tied at halftime, and the Eagles took control of the game from there. And all the trends generally that have made them really good this season continued. Jalen Hurts continued to play really, really well. Miles Sanders looks terrific. With the exception of a couple of plays here and there, the offensive line was fine. Dallas Goedert and A.J. Brown were terrific. So you take the win, you say thanks, and you rest for 10 days until you have to face the Commanders, I guess.
Yep, and by the way, we will be talking to Derek Gunn at noon a little bit about the Eagles. 11 o'clock, we're going to talk to Eric Kratz, former catcher for the Phillies and many other major league teams, guy who's got playoff and World Series experience, and a guy did some broadcasting this year for the Phillies. We'll talk to him at 11. Continue on your point, I agree with everything you said in terms of what you liked. Jalen Hurts throwing the football, to me, is very impressive. I know he had the two fumbles, which is kind of uncharacteristic, but also I like the fact that his rushing attempts are down. Not that I dismiss the weapon because I like it, but when you don't have to use it, don't use it. First five games of the year, he averaged almost 14 rushes a game. The last three, under 7 rushes a game. So he's really cut that in half. And in those last three games, he's averaging more than 10 yards per pass attempt, 8 touchdowns, no interceptions. That's pretty damn good. You mentioned Goddard. I also, Chauncey Gardner-Johnson also just looks like such a great pickup. The one negative, of course, is the run defense. They really, Damian Pierce just gashed them. And I worry, the run defense has not been particularly good this year. Without Jordan Davis, you worry that it may fall a little bit more. That's a concern. But overall, as we said, really good. I love the disbelievers. Clarence Hill Jr., the Fort Worth Star-Telegram, a guy who I use every year in the pregame show when we're trying to get somebody from out of town. And by the way, a very unbiased, good reporter, not a guy who was a shill for the Dallas Cowboys. They Jerry Jones hates this guy, so put that in his favor. Anyway, he tweeted the other day, and needless to say, got backlash from Eagles fans over this. Yes, the Eagles are still undefeated, but they are no juggernaut. They are living on borrowed time. They are not the best team in the NFL, despite their record. The NFC is wide open. That's a fact. Argue with your mama. So, I got Eagle fans going.
Yeah, it's interesting, Glenn. I saw on social media the other day kind of about a 5-minute video from a guy from Pro Football Focus named Seth Galina. And it was actually pretty insightful, kind of breaking down the challenges that opponents have in counteracting what the Eagles do on offense. And basically what it comes down to is you can't play one kind of defense with just one safety, a single high safety, and that forces you to cover A.J. Brown and Devontae Smith one-on-one, and nobody in the league can do that. And you can't play a cover two, which would take away Brown and Smith, but then allow Jalen Hurts to either run the ball or throw it to Dallas Goedert or give it to Miles Sanders. So it was kind of a damned if you do, damned if you don't kind of situation. And I think your point about Hurts running the ball less these last few weeks is really a good one, because it speaks to the idea that teams are trying to take that away. It's such an important component of the Eagles' offense, his ability to run and his proficiency at it, that, okay, if we're going to pick our poison, it's going to be Jalen Hurts, try to beat us with your arm. And guess what? He's been doing that. And that's nothing but a good thing if you're an Eagles fan.
Absolutely. Joe in the Northeast joins us. Hello, Joe.
Hey, how you doing, Glenn?
All right.
You had mentioned small ball a moment ago, and I'm just curious. I want to take you back to the eighth inning when we had Stott on third. We got Segura on first with one out. Any reason in the universe why they wouldn't steal there, knowing that if they throw the ball, Stott can come home? More importantly, even if Segura is thrown out, now the first baseman's not in position to make that play against Schwarber. And it's just, I was watching the game, which I was going bonkers, because, Philly fans are very knowledgeable, and people are sitting there like, they couldn't get a hit. I'm like, besides the point, that was, I think, the last good chance they really had. And then, after that, all the luck starts falling in line for the Astros. So I was just wondering if you could elaborate on why they wouldn't steal there for me.
Well, I'm glad I hadn't really thought of the steal as much as I had thought of the squeeze. But I just want to look up, because they've run successfully in this series. They've stolen bases. They're 3-0 stealing bases. I would have been good with that, Mike. A reason that couldn't happen?
No, and I do wonder if some of that the wonder about stealing is because Schwarber happened to hit the ball right to the first baseman, right? I mean, but the point is well taken that if you send Segura in that situation, you know, again, maybe you can do a double steal and Stott can break for the plate. But if he makes it, then, you know, what do you do then? Do they walk Marsh necessarily? Or do you steal, you know, or...
Bring up Schwarber?
Or if you don't, and here's the thing, here's how you have to be forward thinking. Okay, let's play this forward. Let's say Marsh strikes out, and it's still first and third now with two outs. Mm-hmm. You steal, you have Segura steal, and he makes it. It's second and third with two outs. You can be darn sure they're walking Kyle Schwarber to pitch
well,
to Rhys Hoskins.
Yeah, so, but I do it before that, right? I do
okay.
it with Marsh
yeah,
up.
But that's my point.
I don't do it with Schwarber up, I do it with Marsh up. Oh,
right,
you're saying if he steals and then Marsh strikes out.
Yeah.
I guess, but I think I still see the plus side of that more than the downside of that, of them walking Schwarber and, I don't know, then I got Hoskins up. I hear your point. I'm taking it a step at a time, and I'm thinking that works. They haven't thrown out anybody yet. Not that
yeah,
the Phillies
no,
still
it's
a
good,
done.
It's a good point, and it you know, I'd be curious if Rob Thompson and his staff look back at that moment and say, ah, maybe we should have sent Segura there. And but again, you know, it, you know, who knows? Who
can
knows?
I tell you why this is why baseball's great, though?
Yeah. Yeah, it
because,
is.
Because baseball is the sport more than any other where you have these debates and discussions, where you go back over a game. You know, listen, they're playing for their lives today, and I do want to focus more on that as we do the show, but we'll take the calls. That's fine. But it is the sport where you can go back and dissect every play, every situation, do the what if they had tried this, what if they had tried that, more than any sport. And it's one of the things people ask me, what's your favorite sport? And I always give them the same answer. Hockey's my favorite sport to watch live. Football is my favorite sport to watch on TV. Baseball is my favorite sport to follow, and this is why I love following baseball.
Yeah, and to the point you and I have talked about before too, Glenn, this is a big reason why I've been so down on baseball in the last 10 years, is that because the sport went to this emphasis on home runs and strikeouts, there were fewer of these moments to talk about.
Yeah,
right?
Fair point. Yeah.
You know, if players aren't putting the ball in play as often, if teams aren't trying double steals, you have less strategic what-ifs to play around with. Now, I hope next season when they do away with the shift that maybe it leads to more of this because teams will be incentivized more to put the ball in play, and more of the balls that teams put in play will fall for hits and doubles and triples and all those sorts of things. But, yeah, it's a big reason why I was so down on the sport.
Yeah, I hear you. I can't argue
you know,
that.
Go ahead.
I'm sorry. We'll sneak in Jeff and Camden here. Hey, Jeff.
Yep.
Jeffrey. I do not believe Jeff is ready. All right, let's get Matt up. Hello, Matt.
Hey, good morning, guys. How's it going?
All right.
Hey, Matt.
Hey, you know, this team, I was telling Kyle, I mean, this team, they just, but everyone doubts them. They seem to come back and prove us wrong, and that's why it's not a false hope. I'm totally not giving up on this team yet, and I'm looking forward to this evening, and the biggest thing is, to me, is Wheeler. Like, we got it. The season comes down to this, and we need our ace to go out there and give everything he got. Zach Wheeler needs to have the performance of his lifetime. And, I mean, what better story than Ranger coming in Game 7 and winning it for us?
Yeah.
Matt loves the drama. He loves, he I wants, will. You know, he wants Randy Newman playing the orchestral score in the background and, you know, Roy Hobbs stepping up and hitting the home run and all of that. And look, I think he's right. I think if they're going to win tonight, they need absolutely Zach Wheeler to pitch the game of his life. They just do.
What is the Herb Brooks quote? Great moments are made of great opportunities. Isn't that the line? And that's what you
that's
have here tonight, boys.
That's the one.
That's what you have here
it's
tonight.
Go ahead,
Matt.
I was just going to say, like, I'm just really looking forward to tonight just to see how they come back from that game, because I think these guys are determined, and I think it's going to be a great weekend. Go Phillies!
How old's that little guy, by the way?
Oh, the one's 2 and the other's 4.
Oh, all right. So probably not staying up for the game.
Yeah.
No, I mean, the four-year-old, he sits beside me, but, you know, I mean, he can only go till about 10 o'clock.
Yeah, well, that's
that ain't bad. That's about the time I go to bed most nights.
Well, there you go. 215-592-9494. Mike Sielski, Glenn Mack. Now, game six tonight. Oh, the drama doesn't get better. Hey, fall is upon us. It is that time of year again to consider replacing your old drafty windows and doors before another cold winter season rolls in. When I need a company to help me with the home project, I turn to the experts, the great people at Guided Door and Window. Act now and receive 20% off all windows and doors, plus Guided will allow you to start your project today with no money out of pocket and take up to 3 years to pay it off interest-free once the job is expertly installed. So, you'll be able to start enjoying all the benefits of new, highly energy-efficient windows and doors, including an increased comfort level of your home and lower monthly energy bills, all while taking advantage of 20% savings and having the luxury of paying off your project with 0% interest for up to 36 months. But you got to act now. Offers for a limited time only. Restrictions apply. For full details, call Guided today to schedule a free, no obligation in-home estimate. Mike Sielski, Glenn Mack. Now, Mike is down in Houston for game six tonight. Phillies against the Houston Astros. Mike will be doing a spectacular column for tomorrow's Inquirer, win or lose.
Please lower everybody's expectations. I'm going to be writing on deadline. It's not going to be spectacular. You know this. You're an old newspaper man. Come on.
Yeah, there's 8 o'clock games in baseball that last 3.5 hours. Although the deadline, how do they do it with deadline now? Because you can just rewrite it for the webpage, right?
I have to file at the last out. Okay. So I've got to file the early, and then I can come back and update it.
All right. Well, I'll read the update.
I'm a big believer in lowering expectations. That's all.
That's fine. It is time for This Week in Philadelphia Sports History, brought to you by Shy Vintage Sports, your home for the best Phillies playoff gear. Visit them in Center City, Wayne, or at shivesports.com. Shy Vintage Sports, there's a story in every stitch. Mike, I want to pick up people's expectations as opposed to reading your column, their optimism. So I'm going to take you back to November 2nd, 2009. Actually, I don't know why I chose this because they ultimately don't win the World Series. But nonetheless, this is a great moment from the 2009 World Series in a great, great postseason performance by Chase Utley. Game five, and here you go.
Another 3-2 to Utley. And a shot into right. How about this series for Utley? Another home run. Second of the night. He ties Reggie Jackson for most in one World Series, and he makes it 7-2.
There you go. He did. He had an amazing postseason, amazing World Series, actually. Wasn't that great before that, but an amazing World Series that we will remember for the ages. And, Mike, tonight and tomorrow, somebody on your Philadelphia Phillies has the opportunity to become that guy that 20 years from now we say, oh, man, you remember the Game 6, Game 7 that Alec Bohm had?
Yeah. Yeah. It's there, and it's one of the things that makes sports so cool. You know, I was thinking about this, Glenn. The Game 6 I remember, obviously, a lot of Phillies fans remember this game, was Game 6 in 1993. And I remember being at a Flyers game that night. I was a freshman in college, and we had tickets forever, and so I went with a few friends, and we're at the game, and on the video board above the ice, the Flyers are giving updates on Game 6, and it gets to be 1-0 Blue Jays, 2-0, 4-1, 5-1, and the Flyers are getting their doors blown off, and everybody's depressed. I've probably told this story before. And then all the fans in the Spectrum, or at least most of them, have these small televisions with them, right? Nobody has cell phones at that time. They have these tiny little TVs. And when Lenny Dykstra hits the 3-run home run to bring the Phillies back into the game and start the comeback, that eventually leads to them taking the lead. They show the home run on the video board, and my friends and I just dashed for our cars. We're like, we got to get back to our dorm room and watch the end of this game. The hell with the Flyers. And of course, we all know how that game ended, but it's those sorts of moments that are really memorable and really stay with you.
And we are hoping, looking forward, maybe we hope that we will get more of those tonight and tomorrow. Harry in Maple Shade wants to talk about, we hope tomorrow's starter. Hello, Harry.
Hey, how you doing, Glenn? By the way, congratulations. I got it. You got your performance in Clue. The director, I work with him. We teach together, and he sung your praises up and down, back and forth about how great of an actor you are.
Well, his name is Mike Sokolowski, and he's done a great job directing of making me look better than I am, and that whole thing has been just a delight for me. Last night we had a sellout crowd, I think because there was no World Series game.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, Harry and Mike, the final performance of Clue, oh, I shouldn't say unfortunately, it's tonight at 8 o'clock. So, hey, you've got nothing to do tonight at 8, come on out and see me. I promise you will be back home for the sixth inning when all the good stuff's going to happen.
Yeah. And by the way, last week when Mike gave you the cheesecake.
Yeah.
The peanut butter cheesecake. Yeah, I'm the guy who made it for you.
Oh, wow.
Did I hurt? Yeah,
good. Yeah, thanks. It was great. Thanks. What a nice guy you are.
I know you have a sweet tooth. So, I know you like your sweets and all that
I
stuff.
I do, trying to control it, but yes, indeed, yeah. I do. So,
Harry,
thank you.
Harry, if I can just interject, you are a nice guy, and you are much nicer than Glenn, who didn't share any of that cheesecake with me.
Well, I haven't seen you. He gave it to me at the play.
Well, you should have mailed me some or something. Come on.
You know what? I got some in my car. It's been sitting there for a week. I'll bring it for you. Yeah. Harry, let's talk Ranger Suarez here.
Okay. I think he's the wild card. I think I see him going game six and game seven, coming out of the bullpen, because the guy has ice water in his veins. Okay. Yeah. And he's not the best pitcher on the Philly staff, but first of all, he feels his position excellent. Second, the moment's not too big for him. It's, you know, he comes in, it's a baseball game, let's play. He's done this throughout the whole entire playoffs. He did it independent, mm-hmm. and he's here twice in the World Series, and he's yet to give up a run.
So you bring up an excellent what if, and let us say that we get five or six out of Wheeler tonight, and then the manager's been going early to Alvarez, and he wants to save Sir Anthony, maybe not use Eflin. Could it happen that Ranger Suarez pitches in relief tonight and starts tomorrow?
I think if you do that, he's not going to get very far. In game seven, you can't go in thinking that you're going to get another five innings out of him. Mm-hmm. You know, but I think Harry is right to call him a wild card in that he's kind of the Swiss Army knife weapon that Rob Thompson's going to use if he absolutely needs to. You know, if the series is on the line tonight, it would not surprise me to see him go to Ranger. And then you deal with game seven as you deal with game seven. But I think Harry makes a good point in the idea that you can't just say, well, we need Ranger to start game seven, therefore he cannot pitch tonight. That's not going to work.
Right, because there's no tomorrow if you don't win tonight.
Right, exactly. Now, could he pitch on back-to-back nights? I think he probably could, depending on how much you might need out of him in game six.
And
I think he could, I could do it.
And the other thing here, the one thing that impresses me about him, again, the guy, no panic, no nothing. Guys get on base, and he turns around, he buckles down, boom, out.
I agree.
Pulls it back to him.
Great. Listen, it's been covered a lot. He is a terrific defensive pitcher who didn't qualify by nature of innings for the Gold Glove, but certainly would have won it. So far this postseason, he has pitched in five games, three starts, two relief appearances. He got the save, of course, against San Diego to win it. 14.2 innings, ERA of 1.23.
Yeah.
Yeah, pretty damn good, man. I'll take it. I'll take some Ranger tonight. Two innings of Ranger tonight, three innings of Ranger tomorrow. Boom. When's the parade?
Yeah, and he can spend the entire winter just, you know, keeping his arm in a tub of ice.
That's exactly right. You have, I mean, as we said with Wheeler, after tomorrow, you have, 120 days to get your arm back in shape. There's no reason to wait for any of this. Let's talk to Sean in Levittown. Hey, Sean.
Hey, Glenn and Mike. How are you today?
Great.
Hi, Sean.
Hey, guys. Listen, Nick Castellanos should not be batting fifth. I'm sorry. I mean, I want him to be that guy that you were talking about coming up and getting the big hit, but he's not going to. And for the life of me, I don't understand why Segura isn't batting second. You have him second, and you can. I would move Hoskins back to fifth. But Bryce has no protection behind him, and you need someone that's going to get that big hit, and he's not the guy. And I understand that Rob wants to stick with his team, and he doesn't want to show them that he's not going to.
Yeah, it's game six of the World Series. I don't know that this is the time to be doing that.
No, this should have been done in the Cardinals series. I just don't understand why you're sticking with a guy in the five spot that he's proved. He comes up and it's like a rusty gate.
He's had a really disappointing season, but I got to tell you again, this is not a time when I'm making changes like that. I just think it's bad mojo to do that now.
Yeah, and the one thing I would say too, Sean, is once the postseason begins, I think the risk of kind of shocking the player system and showing that you are maybe panicking a little bit by changing the lineup. The effect of that can be pretty deep and profound, too. And if you say, well, he should have done it in the St. Louis series, well, maybe if he had done it in the St. Louis series, they don't win those two games. You know, not that they tore the cover off the ball against the Cardinals, but, you know, you can't just say in a vacuum, if he had changed the lineup in the St. Louis series, maybe things would be better now in the World Series. If he had changed the lineup in the St. Louis series, maybe they don't make the World Series. So you don't know. I'm with Glenn. I'm not suggesting that Nick Castellanos has been great in the postseason, though he has gotten some hits here and there. I just don't think you mess with that. I think working with your pitching staff in a postseason situation, the way that Thompson has, you know, if a guy's in trouble, get him out of there, get somebody else in there, manage for today, that is much more customary and less kind of a sign of panic than changing the lineup all around would be.
He's Mike Sielski. I'm Glenn Macnow. Coming over, we're going to check in with Eric Kratz, 11-year catcher in the major leagues. This year, of course, a color man for the Phillies on radio next on 94.
As the U.S. men's national team takes center stage at a home World Cup, make sure you're listening to Call It What You Want, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network, where you can join me, I'm Jimmy Conrad, alongside Charlie Davies, Tony Miola, Marcelo Balboa, and Benny Feilhaber throughout this tournament for previews, instant reactions, and analysis of every U.S. match. Then all summer, we're back every Tuesday and Thursday, covering all things U.S. men's national team. Download and follow Call It What You Want on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Mike Sielski, Glenn Macnow. Mike is down in Houston for Game 6 tonight. Phillies against the Houston Astros. Mike will be doing a spectacular column for tomorrow's Inquirer, win or lose.
Please lower everybody's expectations. I'm going to be writing on deadline. It's not going to be spectacular. You know this. You're an old newspaper man. Come on.
Yeah, there's 8 o'clock games in baseball that last 3.5 hours. Although the deadline, how do they do it with deadline now? Because you just rewrite it for the webpage, right?
I have to file at the last out. Okay. So I've got to file the early, and then I can come back and update it.
All right. Well, I'll read the update.
I'm a big believer in lowering expectations. That's all.
That's fine. It is time for This Week in Philadelphia Sports History, brought to you by Shy Vintage Sports, your home for the best Phillies playoff gear. Visit them in Center City, Wayne, or at ShiveSports.com. Shy Vintage Sports, there's a story in every stitch. Mike, I want to pick up people's expectations as opposed to reading your column, their optimism. So I'm going to take you back to November 2nd, 2009. Actually, I don't know why I chose this, because they ultimately don't win the World Series. But nonetheless, this is a great moment from the 2009 World Series in a great, great postseason performance by Chase Utley. Game 5, and here you go.
Another 3-2 to Utley. And a shot into right. How about this series for Utley? Another home run. Second of the night. He ties Reggie Jackson for most in one World Series, and he makes it 7-2.
There you go. He did. He had an amazing postseason, amazing, well, amazing World Series, actually. Wasn't that great before that, but an amazing World Series that we will remember for the ages. And, Mike, tonight and tomorrow, somebody on your Philadelphia Phillies has the opportunity to become that guy. That 20 years from now, we say, oh, man, you remember the Game 6, Game 7 that Alec Bohm had?
Yeah, yeah.
It's there.
And it's one of the things that makes sports so cool. You know, I was thinking about this, Glenn. The Game 6, I remember, obviously, a lot of Phillies fans remember this game, was Game 6 in 1993. And I remember being at a Flyers game that night. I was a freshman in college. And we had had tickets forever, and so I went with a few friends. And we're at the game, and on the video board above the ice, the Flyers are giving updates on Game 6, and it gets to be 1-0 Blue Jays, 2-0, 4-1, 5-1, and the Flyers are getting their doors blown off, and everybody's depressed. I've probably told this story before. And then all the fans in the Spectrum, or at least most of them, have these small televisions with them, right? Nobody has cell phones at that time. They have these tiny little TVs. And when Lenny Dykstra hits the 3-run home run to bring the Phillies back into the game and start the comeback that eventually leads to them taking the lead, they show the home run on the video board, and my friends and I just dashed for our cars. We're like, we got to get back to our dorm room and watch the end of this game. The hell with the Flyers. And of course, we all know how that game ended, yeah. But it's those sorts of moments that are really memorable and really stay with you.
And we are hoping, looking forward, maybe we hope that we will get more of those tonight and tomorrow. Harry in Maple Shade wants to talk about, well, we hope tomorrow's starter. Hello, Harry.
Hey, how you doing, Glenn? By the way, congratulations. You got your performance in Clue. The director, I work with him. We teach together, and he sung your praises up and down, back and forth, about how great of an actor you are.
Well, his name is Mike Sokolowski, and he's done a great job directing of making me look better than I am. And that whole thing has been just a delight for me. Last night we had a sellout crowd, I think because there was no World Series game.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, Harry and Mike, the final performance of Clue, I shouldn't say unfortunately, it's tonight at 8 o'clock. So, hey,
you've
got nothing to do tonight at 8, come on out and see me. I promise you will be back home for the sixth inning when all the good stuff's going to happen.
Yeah. And by the way, last week when Mike gave you the cheesecake.
Yeah.
The peanut butter cheesecake. Yeah, I'm the guy who made it for you.
Oh, wow.
Did I hurt? Yeah,
good. Yeah, thanks. It was great. Thanks. What a nice guy you are.
I know you have a sweet tooth. So, I know you like your sweets and all that
I
stuff.
I do, trying to control it, but yes, indeed, yeah. I do. So,
Harry,
thank you.
Harry, if I can just interject, you are a nice guy, and you are much nicer than Glenn, who didn't share any of that cheesecake with me.
Well, I haven't seen you. He gave it to me at the play.
Well, you should have mailed me some or something. Come on.
You know what? I got some in my car. It's been sitting there for a week. I'll bring it for you. Yeah. Harry, let's talk Ranger Suarez here.
Okay. I think he's the wild card. I think I see him going game 6 and game 7 coming out of the bullpen because the guy has ice water in his veins. Okay. Yeah. And he's not the best pitcher on the Philly stamp, but if he feels his position, excellent. Second, the moment's not too big for him. It's, you know, he comes in, it's a baseball game, let's play. He's done this throughout the whole entire playoffs. He did it in the pennant, mm-hmm. and he's appeared twice in the World Series, and he's yet to give up a run.
So you bring up an excellent what if, and let us say that we get 5 or 6 out of Wheeler tonight, and the manager's been going early to Alvarez, and he wants to save Sir Anthony, maybe not use Eflin. Could it happen that Ranger Suarez pitches in relief tonight and starts tomorrow?
I think if you do that, he's not going to get very far. In game 7, you can't go in thinking that you're going to get another 5 innings out of him. Mm-hmm. You know, but I think Harry is right to call him a wild card in that he's kind of the Swiss Army knife weapon that Rob Thompson's going to use if he absolutely needs to. You know, if the series is on the line tonight it would not surprise me to see him go to Ranger. And then you deal with Game 7 as you deal with Game 7. But I think Harry makes a good point in the idea that you can't just say, well, we need Ranger to start Game 7, therefore he cannot pitch tonight. That's not going to work.
Right, because there's no tomorrow if you don't win tonight.
Right. Right, exactly. Now, could he pitch on back-to-back nights? I think he probably could, depending on how much you might need out of him in Game 6.
And
I think he could. I could do it.
And the other thing here, the one thing that impresses me about him, again, the guy, no panic, no nothing. Guys get on base, and he turns around, he buckles down, boom, out.
I agree.
Pulls it back to him.
Great. Listen, it's been covered a lot. He is a terrific defensive pitcher who didn't qualify by nature of innings for the Gold Glove, but certainly would have won it. So far this postseason, he has pitched in 5 games, 3 starts, 2 relief appearances. He got the save, of course, against San Diego to win it. 14.2 innings, ERA of 1.23.
Yeah.
Yeah, pretty damn good, man. I'll take it. I'll take some Ranger tonight. 2 innings of Ranger tonight, 3 innings of Ranger tomorrow. Boom. When's the parade?
Yeah, and he can spend the entire winter just, keeping his arm in a tub of ice.
That's exactly right. You have, as we said with Wheeler, after tomorrow, you have, 120 days to get your arm back in shape. There's no reason to wait for any of this. Let's talk to Sean in Levittown. Hey, Sean.
Hey, Glenn and Mike. How are you today?
Great.
Hi, Sean.
Hey, guys. Listen, Nick Castellanos should not be batting fifth. I'm sorry. I mean, I want him to be that guy they were talking about coming up and getting the big hit, but he's not going to. And for the life of me, I don't understand why Segura isn't batting second. You have him second, and you can. I would move Hoskins back to fifth. But Bryce has no protection behind him, and you need someone that's going to get that big hit, and he's not the guy. And I understand that Rob wants to stick with his team, and he doesn't want to show them that he's not going to.
Yeah, it's Game 6 of the World Series. I don't know that this is the time to be doing that.
No, this should have been done in the Cardinal series. I just don't understand why you're sticking with a guy in the 5 spot that he's proved. He comes up and it's like a rusty gate.
He's had a really disappointing season, but I got to tell you again, this is not a time when I'm making changes like that. I just think it's bad mojo to do that now.
Yeah, and the one thing I would say too, Sean, is once the postseason begins, I think the risk of kind of shocking the player system and showing that you are maybe panicking a little bit by changing the lineup, the effect of that can be pretty deep and profound, too. And if you say, well, he should have done it in the St. Louis series, well, maybe if he had done it in the St. Louis series, they don't win those 2 games. Not that they tore the cover off the ball against the Cardinals, but, you can't just say in a vacuum, if he had changed the lineup in the St. Louis series, maybe things would be better now in the World Series. If he had changed the lineup in the St. Louis series, maybe they don't make the World Series. So you don't know. I'm with Glenn. I'm not suggesting that Nick Castellanos has been great in the postseason, though he has gotten some hits here and there. I just don't think you mess with that. I think working with your pitching staff in a postseason situation, the way that Thompson has, if a guy's in trouble, get him out of there, get somebody else in there, manage for today, that is much more customary and less kind of a sign of panic than changing the lineup all around would be.
He's Mike Sielski. I'm Glenn Macnow. Coming over, we're going to check in with Eric Kratz, 11-year catcher in the major leagues. This year, of course, a color man for the Phillies on radio next on 94.
Hey, this is Richard Deitch, the host of the Sports Media Podcast. If you're interested in what's happening with all the places where you consume sports, the Sports Media Podcast has you covered.
I've been turning down interviews all week. Hoda Kotb reached out, Oprah, George Stephanopoulos. So I said no. I was booked on the Deitch podcast before the Taylor Swift phenomenon. I must live up to my responsibility.
Listen wherever you get your podcasts.